Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Anne Ivel from the Ostomy Society. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with the Ostomy Society.
Well, I actually don't have an ostomy. It's my husband that has an ostomy, and he had it 33 years ago. He has what's called an ileostomy. And as a result of that, I've sort of been on the periphery until I retired. And I was asked by my husband, who became the president of the local chapter, if I would look after a library and, you know, find materials that people could borrow about, you know, stories about ostomies or any information books. So that's what I did. And then eventually I got on the board of directors of the local Ostomy Association. In the meantime, I was involved with a national committee called the Spouses and Significant Others. And at first I was the secretary on this committee, and then I became the chair for 5 years. As a result of that, I became interested in the national level and got on the board of directors and took various positions on that, ending up as vice president, and now I've been president for 4 years.
So can you tell me a little bit about the national organization's work?
Their actual work? Well, I can tell you that based on their mission statement, our purpose is to helping people with an ostomy and their families to live life to the fullest. Our priorities are to support people, to educate people, to collaborate with other agencies and advocacy. And what we try for, our values are excellence in ostomy care, collaborative partnerships, and professional accountability. The most rewarding collaborative partnership is with the the nurses specialized in wound, ostomy, and continence Canada. And they are registered nurses who have special training in wound, ostomy, and continence. And we have a really excellent relationship with them. I think where we're going is our vision is to be Canada's voice for people living with an ostomy. And our strategy is to advocate for people with an ostomy with the government and professional agencies. And we've done quite a lot of that through the advocacy committee. Enhance our governance structure. We're in the process of trying to change our governance, well, hopefully that we can, from the chapters being the members of Ostomy Canada to the board of directors being the members of Ostomy Canada, to take away the governance responsibilities from the chapters. So if we find it's not working, and it would be better if the board of governors were totally responsible for governance. Ensure the financial stability of the society. Well, we have difficulty there with trying to raise money and getting people interested in supporting the association. That's quite difficult. Oh. And we are communicating with social media. We have some social media, Facebook, I think. We're on Twitter. And some of the smaller groups, like parents of children with ostomies and a youth, younger people with ostomies, they have their own Facebook page on social media. And we also have publications, including brochures and a magazine, which we publish twice a year. And we also want to engage the chapters. We not only have chapters, but we also have what are called peer support groups, and there are other stakeholders that we are interested in, like the nurses, Crohn's and Colitis Canada, Bladder Cancer Canada we're involved with, and also the manufacturers too. We've become involved a little bit with them as well. They're Hollister. The main ones are Hollister, Coloplast, and Competech.
So, when you mentioned advocacy work, has there been any success in that that stands out for you?
Yes, there has been in Ontario. I think it was 3 years ago where they increased the ADP, the Assistive Devices Program, for reimbursement for ostomy supplies. For many years, it had just been $600. And the former government, the Liberal government in Ontario, they increased it by up to $975 for a person with one ostomy. If they have two ostomies, they get double. And I think if they're on social assistance, they get more money too.
So
now, we did speak to the people as a national organization, and also the Nurses Association together. We spoke to the ADP director, and we feel that we were helpful in getting this decision made to increase the reimbursement amount of money, grant.
So if you could send any message to the community as to why it's important to have these devices and these programs in place, what would you say?
Well, to be quite honest, if somebody has an ostomy, they need to wear an ostomy pouch and a skin barrier, which is sometimes called a flange. They have to wear it 100% of the time, because this is the only way that they are able to eliminate fecal matter or urine. And so, you know, it's also a life-saving surgery. Many older people usually have cancer as a result, and they have to have an ostomy. Young people, it's usually colitis or Crohn's. And for babies, it can be birth defects. And then, of course, there's trauma, too, which could cause someone to have an ostomy. So it is a life-saving surgery, and I feel that you know, people should understand that and try and get. I know in the past, people with ostomies were ostracized because the pouches were made of rubber, which would disintegrate. But today, they're made of an odor-proof plastic, and they're very discreet. Many people wouldn't know that someone has an ostomy, not unless they tell you. So I think we need to change our attitudes toward it, that it is a life-saving surgery, and that people, as a result of having an ostomy, they need to wear a pouching system 100% of the time, and they can also lead a very full life.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. This segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jane Boke from COPE. So, can you tell me a little bit about COPE?
Sure. COPE Service Dogs is an organization that raises and trains dogs for people who have disabilities. The unique part about our organization is that some of the training of the dogs occurs in high school, where we match students who are at risk of leaving school early with the puppies and dogs in training and teach them how to train the dogs to become service dogs.
So, what are some of the impacts that this can have on at-risk youths?
Well, it really can be life-changing, and I've seen many, many examples of it. We've had, since the organization or the program started about 15 years ago, we've had about 1,000 students go through there, and some have had incredible life-changing experiences. But in general, the skills that you teach a student in order to learn to train a dog and motivate a dog to perform are also skills that they can use in their lives outside of dog training as well, like applying for a job and relationships with family and co-workers and so on. So, you know, when you learn how to have a dog perform really well, you also learn how to motivate yourself and get yourself working at your peak performance as well, with emotional self-control, etc. The other amazing benefit is the mental health gains that the students have. They build confidence, they learn to communicate well, and this translates into them doing better in their other courses, and for some of them actually staying in school and graduating.
So, are there any challenges in finding the right person for the right dog?
Well, we have a method that has been very successful for us, where we actually do, it's a personality survey that any person might do, but we do the same survey for the dogs as well. And then we look at the results of the surveys and match, make sure that the dog is has more of an ask character than the actual partner. So we look at their general personalities and also, of course, the strengths of the dogs and the needs of the applicants as well. But we have a training camp in which each applicant, at the beginning of the training camp, will sort of do a little work with each dog, and then that helps us get to know the dog and the person and how they respond to each other, and that also helps in the matching process. And then after we've made that decision, they do a 24/7 umbilical cord bonding period, in which the applicant and the dog are, together 24/7, attached with the leash, with nobody else interacting with the dog, and that really helps start and solidify the bonding process.
So, in your time with COPE, what's been the greatest success that you've witnessed?
Oh my goodness, there's been so many. I really can't narrow it down, but some of the, first of all, the life-changing experiences that the partners gain is incredible. Just one gentleman who had an accident and was now in a wheelchair, and when he first came to us, he could barely look up at me and, just could tell was very down and depressed. And after we matched him with his dog, the incredible change that occurred as he progressed in his life with his dog was just a thrill to witness. And, now he coaches football, and he just got an important position with his job and so on. And it's just been amazing. And then, of course, the other stories of students who, can't get out of bed in the morning and to get to school, and the dogs, are used as a way to kind of get them in the door. And, same thing, they really can't function. And then when they start thinking, hey, when I come to school, I can be working with the dog and then gain some skills that they can transfer to their other parts of their lives. One boy we had just like that, and is now, graduated from high school with an apprenticeship job waiting for him, and high 90s in his courses. So there's been a lot of amazing stories. One last one, which is something that we've just been working on recently, is placing dogs as facility dogs. So that is dogs in a facility that can help many people. So, for example, one of our dogs has been placed in a hospice. So she's there 9 to 5 working to help comfort the families, even the staff of the hospice. And another dog has been placed at a child advocacy center. So we're seeing some really, really great benefits from
like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Brain injury is the leading killer and disabler of people under the age of 44 and kills more people under the age of 20 than any other causes combined. Texting or talking on a cell phone while operating a motorized vehicle can lead to serious car crashes, brain injuries, or death. Take the pledge and help put a stop to distracted driving. Go to idontpledge.com to make a pledge to drive only. Never text. Everyone deserves to travel on our roads and communities without the fear of a distracted driver.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about ostomies from Ann Ivel, and we heard about the mental health impact of therapy dogs, Jane Boak from COPE. In this segment of our show, we're going to hear about para-archery from Kyle Tremblay. So, you have a background in para-archery. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved with the sport?
It was kind of just by chance. After my accident, I had to kind of think of different ways to I'd get involved in different sports. The sports that I played before when I was able-bodied, where I wasn't able to play anymore. So I had originally started with sledge hockey. And then from there, there was a few issues with just the amount of traveling and I was having some issues with fatigue. So it was, I needed to step down from that, and I went with something a little more mentally challenging than physically challenging, and that's how I pretty much got into archery.
So, if I may ask, what was the nature of your accident? What happened?
So it was August 29th, 2009. I'd gone for a drive on my ATV, and it lost control and went off into the bush. I woke up several hours later and was not able to move my legs. It was later at night at this time now, and I started yelling for help, but nobody could hear me, and I ended up spending 14 hours in the bush in the rain, and I was found later the next day by my parents' friend, and then my parents showed up. I was rushed immediately to the hospital in Ottawa, and they did the back repair surgery. But then 5 days after that, I contracted Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is when your body's nervous system attacks its nerves, and that paralyzed me completely from head to toe to the point where I couldn't breathe, I couldn't move anything, and I was down to just being able to blink one eye.
So, how has the sport of para-archery helped you to cope with your situation?
Well, my entire life has always revolved around sports, even before my accident. And I've always found sports to be a very powerful tool in building character, building commitment, trust, teamwork. So for me now, with all these challenges and with being at the time new to a wheelchair, kind of took, distracted me from all the negative things and gave me something to focus and work towards. And honestly, the distraction is the biggest thing, so you're not dwelling on the things that you can't do anymore.
So, in your time with the sport, has there been any success you've experienced?
Yes, I've. So, just this past year, I am now the top-ranked archer in Canada, and I broke the record for the highest 720 score, with a score of 703 out of 720. And now that's a national record, and that was 3 points off the world record. The sport has helped give me some independence. I travel now on my own whenever we go overseas or to any tournaments in the U.S. That was a big step, you know, being able to travel with the bow case, suitcase, and getting on and off planes and being in different countries and figuring out how, because they're not all as accessible as Canada, and there's a lot of different challenges depending on where you go, but it has helped immensely, just kind of given me something to channel all my energy and focus towards. I'm having success on the field, and I feel that in these next 2 years, when we're now on like the close road to the Olympics, I'm more pumped than ever and more focused and determined to raise my game and to put a good showing at these Olympics in 2020.
So, if you could send any one message to the community about why it is they should keep doing the sports and the things they love, despite any condition, what would you say?
I would always say never underestimate the power of sport. I think people, when they see somebody that has a broken back, they just kind of see it as, oh, that person can't walk anymore, and they don't see all the additional challenges that come with that. And that's really tough. Like, people in wheelchairs definitely have a really tough road ahead. And I think I would always encourage people to get involved into any sport, and the more sincere you are towards that sport, the more it's going to help you with integrating you back into society and socializing. It distracted me from all the negative and gave me something to channel towards that's very positive. You're constantly training and improving yourself. And I think that is super important, because anybody that's in a wheelchair has lost. And if you don't do anything and you sit there and you dwell on what you've lost, you start going downhill. Whereas if you can channel your energy into a sport or into a hobby that you care about and you're passionate about, that will completely take over your life, and you'll be happier. You'll be accomplishing stuff. People will be seeing and encouraging you. It does wonders in every aspect of life. I've never, ever not recommended sports, to whether it's to kids, whether it's to adults, whether it's to disabled people. I think sports builds character. It's the teamwork, commitment, and then you're physically healthy as well, because you got to be training. So never underestimate the power of sport. That is my biggest thing.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, no problem.
Never underestimate the power of sport. I think that's very true, my friends. No matter what it happens to be that you're passionate about, any sort of disability, whether it be something you'd be born with or something you acquire along the way, doesn't have to limit you from who you are and what you want to do in life, what you love to do. Too many times, a person with a disability will say, this is all I can get. This job that's going nowhere, this relationship that's going nowhere, it's the best I can hope for. Why? Why do we limit ourselves so very much? Do we really think that the one little factor that makes us unique is all-defining? Do we really say, whoop, I move a little differently, or whoop, I speak a little differently, people won't accept me based on that? It's 2019, folks. You would think all those prejudices would simply go the way of the dinosaurs. But the truth is, if we impose it on ourselves, if we give up the things we love because we don't recognize that they can be done in a modified way, we're only making things harder on ourselves. And speaking as one who's been at this a long time, I don't think I've ever met anyone who likes hardship, who likes difficulty. Truth is, a person with a disability can and will achieve if given the right tools, the right timing, and the right opportunities. Now, why in the world would an accident limit one's ability to do sport? Truth is, there's modified sport for just about everything. And if you stop exercising, if you stop recognizing the value of keeping your health, you stop living. And honestly, you don't go through all that pain and all that retraining of yourself simply to stop caring. Throw in the towel. Truth is, a person with a disability should really only do it for themselves. Public perception matters. Don't get me wrong. Everyone wants to feel loved and accepted. But the truth is, a person with a disability must first see themselves as a strong, capable human being. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about some of the prejudices that come with having an ostomy appliance. Truth is, it's simply a medical need. It's what someone needs to live and function in society. And are we going to allow ourselves to say this is ugly simply because it's what another human being needs? No. Truth is, if they're living, if they're happy, if they're productive, regardless of what makes them special, regardless of what they need to keep them at their strongest, all life is beautiful and capable, my friends. And we as a society just have to grow into our understanding. We're all just a roll of the dice away from being in that situation ourselves. So, keeping an open mind and going beyond what the law and basic decency tells us we need to do is paramount. Because someday, we're going to need that understanding. And someday, someone might have to be there for us. The truth is, we're all defined by what's really in our hearts, not what we do for public image. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.